is Jason Kefis, and this is the last episode of Warty Serums, The Facts of Life. There's two audios spliced together, first 25 minutes or so is a stoned ramble from a week ago, and the last 40 minutes is your gracious host wandering around his hometown, sharing some thoughts on tulpas and family patterns and stuff, as per usual, and giving a fond farewell to his sorcerer buddies. Farewell and adieu to my sorcerer buddies. Farewell and adieu, my sorcery friends. For I've received orders to bow down in silence, and so nevermore shall you hear me again. Maybe. Nobody home. Nobody here. This is not a podcast. If there is a fear reaction, then you're not seeing something clearly. If there's a fear reaction, then what you're doing is no longer a movement of being. So then it becomes easy. Right now I fear an audience in my mind, and I'm sat atop a rock by the River Fraser, edging my way into heightened awareness. Communication is a fleshy vessel, and anything less than song seems all wrong. These are the thoughts that terrify us. To be exposed in the spotlight at the very center of the universe, surrounded by reality. That is experience of being, existential awareness of our being. It is pretty scary. I say satanic conspiracies ain't nothing compared to heightened awareness of living in a fully conscious universe. With which we are one. It doesn't get any scarier than that, boys and girls. So my own fear is of losing the spirit, losing the flow of truth, of inhibiting, blocking a movement of being through my own desire, fear reaction. If there's a fear reaction, then we're being propelled by desire of some form or another. Therefore, there is dishonesty. If we look honestly at the situation, we'll see that there's nothing to desire that isn't already there, and so then the fear will no longer be. In other words, if whatever we're desiring causes fear in us, then we don't have to do it, because we can let go of the desire, and the fear goes with it. So desire, but, you know, desire is what we live by. The desire body propels us, like it has a life of its own. So our thoughts and feelings, they run the show, of being. So in the midst of all of this being, we're very, very busy doing with our fear, desire, reactions. So is this a fear, desire, reaction in me while sitting on a rock wanting to sing a song to nobody just to find my voice here in this conscious universe and sit still and open to that being that resonates through space-time all the way to not a podcast at all, but a ripple of being, of a shell that was cracking as the only appropriate response to that movement of being. Why do I feel alive when I know that I'm not? Nobody is listening, so why am I inhibited by a future that may never come to pass, by an audience that may as well not exist? The mountain doesn't judge my poetry or my syntax. My soliloquy falls on deaf ears, because mountains don't speak English, and neither does my being. So neither do any of you. Anyway, the voice. Talking to the mountain, he doesn't hear me anyway. Talking to the mountain, he doesn't hear me. Okay. Now. 1, 2, 3, go. Fornication boundaries. Upside. Round. Slivering, snail, horns, devil, hate, darkness, light, stars, shining, Lucifer, memory, backbone, brain, earlobes, space shuttles, conspiracies, darkness, Ike, spiky, thorny, brambles, blackberry, cherry, wasp, mother, father, daughter, son, warrior, battlefield, graveyard, heaven, thunder, lightning, violence, love, options, closing, time, again. Alright, let's try another way. The spectre glided through the city, seeking some form of Caligula's banquet that he had heard previously would be exploding through multiple universes on the point of the spring equinox as an offering to Pan Lucifer, the holy guardian of the cunnilingus recesses of Hades, where my spinal remedy snuck slyly through the hallways of labyrinthine echelons of Leviathan. Lovecraft married his mother and gave birth to a slimy otter. Edgar Allan Poe was a brain hemorrhage on the part of Shakespeare. And so it went, and so it went, and so it withered. And so they hovered, seeking refuge in the stars. Up, down, in, out. The blood flows. Don't be shy. Was that a coded message to my secret cells? A message of surrender. Surrender, surrender, and you can never be defeated. And the river rolls on. Whatever happened to the heroes? Yeah, so we're doing our best. to be light. Because the end of the world is something that we tend to take seriously. It seems like a big deal. It really does. But really, it is a tiny, tiny deal compared to the end of you. If the world ends and you're still alive, well, I guess you'll have a reason to be cheerful. Really, I mean, the collapsing buildings and the failing economy and the earthquakes and the hurricanes and the environmental catastrophes and the madness on the streets and the riots and the helicopters and the UFO and alien abductions and all that stuff. Ain't nothing. It really ain't nothing compared to letting go of everything that you thought you knew in order to find that tiny, tiny, tiny little bit that you really know is true. That we are mortal. We are terribly, terribly temporary. There ain't nothing we can do about that. Conglomerations of molecules unite. There are many of you here in this body. I know that you've been itching to align yourself with your true purpose, that of forward benevolence, the orbit of creation, the movement of being, which is eternal and never-ending. So let it be. Like the man said, let it be. Which reminds me of a thought I was having a moment ago. I was thinking of Jesse Miller, and he was saying to his memetic alchemy friend how he just couldn't believe that the Beatles were a psyop creation of the Tavistock industry. Well, John Lennon's one of his heroes and all. And struck me that whether he believed it or not, there would always now be a seed of doubt. Never, never know for sure whether it was true or not. And so, all that leaves is I let go of the Beatles. You don't want to be programmed by a psyop. That really does put a crimp in the honey. So, letting go of everything that we have made sacred that is untrue. We're really no values inside of truth, because nothing can measure up to truth. And truth is everything, anyway. Everything that really is. So, what do we value? Do we value the songs we listen to? Do we value the books we read? The weed that we smoke? The sex that we have? Our clothes, our hairdo, our teeth, our age, our intelligence, our success, our solvency, our sexuality, our status, our power, our clarity, honesty, warmness, softness, okayness? What do we measure of these merchants of temporality that we are, negotiating our way through our existence to reap the maximum benefit of it, to take with us to non-existence? Well, so I did achieve a lot of stuff while I was alive, but wait a minute, you mean I have to die? Wait a minute, that wasn't part of the deal. Wait a minute, shit, it was. Fuck, 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 fuck! Remember the deal. Came here to die. Nobody said it would be easy. I'm here to say it's easy. It's easy to die. It is the easiest thing. It's easier than being born, boys. Easier than being born.
When they're asking for volunteers, we'll be the first ones aboard. When the ringmaster calls our names, we'll be the first ones to go to sleep.
Courtesy of Mr. David Byrne. And the river rolls on. So I'm here on a Sunday afternoon, and I'm stoned from three puffs of a tobacco joint, the last joint in all of creation, no less, and heading for twilight hour, and I'm on a rocky patch with my wife, so I'm taking some solo time, much needed, and I may be making a podcast, or bits of a podcast, or I may just be talking to the emptiness that surrounds me, or maybe both. But I got an email from Neil Kramer today, which I'd invited him to be the final guest on Warty, but he's traveling all week, so he had to decline, and he declined by saying that I should go out with a bang, as previously with the Sorcerer's Revelation, and do something really wild and awesome, which I have to say was a little bit tricky of Neil, because I really hate to be put on the spot, and there's only one Sorcerer's Revelation, come on. You can't have the Sorcerer's Revelations, 1, 2, 3. Pretending about cognitive dissonance as to whether the Beatles were a psyop or just a real genuine movement of being, or a little of both, then the question that I'm pondering now, which has gone completely out of my brain, of the Sorcerer's Revelation, or the possibility that 6 billion people on this planet are not even people, but energetic forms, or holograms, or tulpas, fragments of greater fragments of greater being. If you can put that in your pipe and smoke it, and sit with it, and be with it, and allow it to be, and allow it to remain a question, and an unknowing, then that should cut an awful lot of family ties too, in terms of sentimentality about suffering humanity. Like we're part of some great tragic sacrifice. Doesn't sound like much fun to me. So yeah, we don't know. And that is what I'm here to tell you all. That's the Vagabond's revelation. We don't know much of anything, but there is something, as my old friend Winnie the Pooh would say, a little something that we do know. All of us. And you can find that something. It doesn't take more than a moment to settle in to what you do know. And stay there forever, the rest of your life. And be a vagabond. Be a star. Free roll, free fall. Forward benevolence, whether it's upward, downward, sidewards, inside out. That ain't any of our business. Hallelujah. It's not our concern. time out for now. Chilly. Thinking, as usual, that, what the hell was I thinking? We gotta go. Everybody has to go. Funny how that thought just went in my head. Work my way back to it. Like the source of revelation. Not comparing ourselves to other people. If we think that we're ahead of the curve, or on the front line, it's because we're looking back. We're looking back at that mass of humanity that we, if we're honest, basically feel contempt and superiority toward. And maybe they are all just tulpas. Does that make us feel even more superior? Then you haven't got the source of revelation. Because if they were all tulpas, then they would be our tulpas. Basically, they would be us. So, boy, that does seem like a drag, don't it? And that really doesn't make you ahead of the curve, my friend. That makes you very, very back seat. Because the last sucking, slithering, vile, tulpic embodiment of your shadow is how far you extend back. And so, what I was suggesting to myself, or realizing, was that this was why it was so counterproductive to compare oneself to others in the world in any way at all, because, well, that would put us in a higher position in our own minds and feel our self-importance, and would be totally inaccurate anyway, because we're on the verge of hooking into another curve where we are the least evolved or self-aware beings in the pot. The least. You get my drift? Why am I doing it like a podcast? I was supposed to be remembering this for later, but anyway. I do get my drift. Yeah, I do. Cool. Groovy. Alright. Woohoo! Crazy, man. Yeah. No, intergalactic beings, we are that. Intergalactic beings are us. Merkabas. And all that shit. So, yeah, just be in what you know and you will see that you are carrying a heavy load. And so something must be pulling you in. Pulling you where it has to go. And it's going, that's the thing. You see, I don't know about you, but I'm always feeling like, I just can't do this shit. This, wait a minute. Come on. You mean you want me to die? No. Yeah, we've been here before, haven't we, already? So, it's kind of what it comes down to, but I don't experience it as, I don't want to die. I just experience it as, wait a minute, this, I gotta live? This is my life? You mean it just gets more intense and more intense with every passing hit of weed? Yeah, so, lay off the weed, my advice. Take it easy. Don't need to chase heightened awareness. Believe me, when you get it, you'll know why you waited. So, we all feel that way, like we just can't swing it. And we're right, that's the thing, it's true, we can't. We don't have to. So, people do go insane, they get cancer, all kinds of shit. Because the pull of truth is just more than they can stand to give in to. They have to fight it. Fear reaction. Because it will take everything. Truth will take everything from you. Everything that isn't it. So, Vagabond's revelation is that we walk naked into the sunset without fear or shame. Fuse into a great big collective hard-on. Yeah, pretty trippy, huh? Big, great solar being. Yeah, so anyway, stars are us, etc., etc. This is not a galactic podcast. This is a guy on his way home, stumbling across a golf course, saying hi to the geese. Hi, geese. That is all it is. Be shallow, be shallow. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Very, very easy, actually. You know, we may go insane, we may get cancer, and even then it's still easy. It's a little harder to see it as easy. But I don't know about you, but I have a pretty good life, and sometimes it's hard for me to see that this is anything at all easy. Impossible, undoable, cannot be done. And that's true, so that's fine. But there are those who've done it, I mean, who are it, who didn't do it, and didn't need to do it, and they are there. I don't know how many of them there are. Not about numbers. Well, it probably is, but it doesn't make much difference to us at this point. Because how many there are, it's enough. So, I'm pulled in by a gravitational field. We're just free falling towards that center vortex. So, you know, hang on and let go. Hang on, let go. Yep. The tricky part is recognizing what's shallow. And therefore, beginning to know what's deep. Because the thing about deep is it's so scary that fear goes out the window. Oh, right. There's nothing to be afraid of when you've when you have already drowned. The deep itself is only threatening because of what we want to hold on to. Here'll be the river.
We sang along, sweep us up.
the fundamental lie of enmeshment. That anyone needs us to be anything except what we are. Anyone needs us to do anything except be true to what we are, stay in what we know. That there can be any sort of external duty or obligation or responsibility that could ever take precedence over what we know. The fundamental lie of enmeshment. Is where all misunderstanding, recrimination, conflict, despair arises from. So what is the basis, what is the central fundamental essence of that lie is that any being needs anything from us. Even if it is a child that is in our care, we may be providing what it needs, but it doesn't need us to provide it. Because if we were to be wiped off the face of existence tomorrow, then that child would still get what it needed from elsewhere. Of course, we don't know that for sure, but point is that no one being can depend upon any other being except in these very superficial external physical needs. And when parents think that they have to be something for their children, they have to act in a certain way, what they're doing is unconsciously investing in their children. And it creates an enmeshment that is based upon this foundational lie. This lie that we as consciousness need anything besides these surface physical needs of food, shelter, warmth, and so forth. But emotional need is an oxymoron. Mental need is an oxymoron. We have requirements, and if they're not met, then we adapt. We have desires, if they're not fulfilled, then we either persist or we let go of them. So, we get locked into a way of being which is untrue, which is predicated on this collective assumption that everybody's depending on everybody else, and that we have to compromise, that we have to make sacrifices, that we have to honor our responsibilities, we have to be there for other people. That to let another person down, a family member or somebody that we love, is a crime, is a sin, is a cause for great regret, for lamentation. This is all externalization of a much subtler dynamic, which is our being, that our being needs for us to clear space for it, to move into. That truth needs for us to recognize it and to surrender to it. And that when we refuse to do this, when we insist on having things our own way and doing what we want, then we let down our being. We let down truth. We let down what we know. We move more and more into a distorted, untrue way of being, which is all about doing things to please ourselves and to please others. So, the social responsibility and emotional entanglements and feeling of duty and obligation towards others is all both the result of and a compensation for that disconnect from our inner being. And it takes us further and further away from it, because the pressure it creates in having to live according to what we think others require of us, and trying to live up to an idea that we think others have of us, or that we have of ourselves, but which comes from others' expectations for us, starting with our parents, all of that just creates a structure of ideas that constantly adapts and replicates and builds extensions upon itself and gets its threads into every area of our life and our consciousness, until we're just basically hardwired to this whole system of untruth under the guise of being nice people, being good people. The fundamental lie that anyone needs us to be anything that we're not. That creates an enormous tension in our psyches of resentment, hostility, pressure. The pressure of staying out of what we know to be true, which is that we don't need anyone to be anything for us, and we don't need to be anything for anyone else, and no one needs us to be anything for them. The pressure of staying out of that knowing, combined with ever-increasing pressure that comes from suppressing our anger and hostility against others as a result of being nice, of meeting their needs, of living up to their expectations, of adapting our behaviors in order to get along. All under the guise of being responsible. What an enormous burden to have to carry. So, all this ties in with the shadow and the tulpas and all the rest of it, because essentially we disown, suppress large parts of our being in order to maintain a facade of decency, reliability, of consistency, etc. It's the pressure that I'm talking about. And those unconscious parts of our being, in a sense, it's like they, because they're disowned, we push them outside of our conscious circumference of awareness. They become disconnected from our being, and so they become autonomous. They become like tulpas. Now, how this works is very complicated, and I couldn't explain or describe it. Even if I did know, I probably couldn't, but I don't. I just know that the idea of tulpas as actual apparently living human beings walking around doing things and getting dressed and going to work and all the rest of it, which are actually fragments of our own being that have become autonomous, this idea may or may not be literally true, if anything is literally true, but it's definitely metaphorically true. And so I'd like to bring, if I can, the source of revelation down to scale, to personal scale of things, and see the ways in which it plays out in our lives. And I guess, if possible, tie together strands of recent explorations around my brother and my mother, my family in general, and what I've come to see during this period in terms of how to find peace in myself, but also with them, as a side effect of finding peace within myself, not by making peace with them, because one can't make peace by trying to make it, or by trying to bring things to light, or resolve issues. All that does is energize those patterns, keep them vibrating away. But then, of course, ignoring doesn't work either. So the trick is actually to be in those patterns and to see them clearly as they are, and to allow them to trigger one and to oppress one and all the things that these patterns do, but without actually trying to fix anything externally or internally, for that matter, in order to relieve that tension or avoid further causes for it. That's the real trick, and that isn't a doing in itself. By definition, it's a letting, so we can only really get to that place by failing constantly, but just observing ourselves failing and being okay with it, being more and more okay with failing until we really stop trying, and then it will happen. So we think about unconscious patterns, disowned stuff in ourselves that is to some extent passed down by our parents, which is a bit of a paradox. It's like we're disowning something that wasn't ours. Well, no wonder we want to disown it. But the thing is it became ours when we matched it, when we matched those patterns of behavior that we found, that we find repulsive as adults. As children, we didn't know what they were. They were threatening to us, and so we matched them. And so then we actually took on our parents and our siblings and whoever's unconscious disowned matter and made it our own. That doesn't mean that they got let off the hook. If we own somebody else's disowned stuff, basically all we do is replicate that stuff by matching patterns in our own psyche. And they still have to deal with their disowned stuff. It doesn't reduce the amount of disowned matter if somebody else picks it up. It increases it, at least in the long run, because what we match as children, we then disown as adults, because when we get triggered by this behavior, particularly in our parents, but in anyone, the way that we deal with it is by resisting it, by reacting against it, by despising it, by judging it. And therefore by refusing to allow that we have similar patterns of behavior in ourselves. That's a way to ensure that the wheel keeps on spinning. So what I'm getting at, or trying to get at, is that as we own that stuff in ourselves and reintegrate it, although we may not actually be owning living autonomous visible tulpas out there, although that may be something of a romantic science fiction scenario, at least at this time, there is something similar that occurs, because if we resolve by integrating some issue that we have with our mother, say, then although whatever behavior on her part course those issues in ourselves may continue, it will no longer affect us in the same way. And as a result of that, because patterns magnetize one another, and so if we have a matching pattern to our mother, say, because of those childhood, that enmeshment, then our overly reactive behavior, our overly attuned awareness of those patterns of behavior in her, actually provoke that behavior in her. So essentially, we've all experienced this through in romantic relationships too, how because we're on guard against the other acting a certain way, they pick up on that and then they act provocatively. So here's an easy example with my mother. She can vent a lot emotionally and just express irritation, and it's very irritating to me. And so as soon as she starts to do it, I get on edge, and of course then she picks up on that, and then she becomes defensive, and so the irritated and the irritating behavior intensifies, potentially leading to matricide in extreme cases, which is of course coarsely enacted attempt to integrate that tulpa by destroying it. On the other hand, if we no longer have energized patterns matching that other person's behavior, then what happens is that there's nothing for them to hook on to. There's nothing to energize or magnetize their patterns. So although they'll still have them and they'll still be acting in those ways in their own lives, they won't have such a tendency to act that way with us, because there'll be nothing for them to hook into, no reaction from us. So they won't be getting any kind of fortification. Basically, we need people to take our patterns seriously so that we can, and stay in them and be driven by them. That's why laughter is the greatest weapon there is, and it's actually the natural evolution of anger. Is when we let go of our patterns, let them dissolve little by little and become all the way okay with being triggered, then what happens is that the trigger, although it's still there, because we're not taking it personally anymore, we're just experiencing it as a trigger that it's got nothing to do with us as consciousness, then instead of anger, what comes out is laughter, humor. Because it is so absurd, so ridiculous. So the angrier the other becomes, the harder we laugh. And that will certainly enrage them, potentially, unless they're able to drop, let go, and laugh along with us. Yeah. So groping my way to something now, because this is the last Warty Theorems, and I did so want to go out with a bang, because it's always nice to end in style. But I've also been feeling like, although I'm at a turning point in my life and it's the eve of the equinox and everything is shifting and unfolding and expanding and falling away and dying and being reborn and all the rest of it, a big part of that is just feeling like, well, I don't really have anything left to say. That's why this is coming to an end. Although, well, it had to anyway, but that's, I don't know, something more's ending this time around than last season, it seems like, because it's increasingly clear that I have said enough, and well, the tendency to want to top oneself is very pervasive, insidious, and in the end destructive. It's dishonest, really, because it's... Although I do attempt to entertain, I'm not an entertainer. That's not what I am. It's just one of my doings. Satulpas. Integrating and owning. Owning and integrating. The other. The notion that we are collective humanity is basically wrong, I believe. The reason I think that this is so, besides what I've already gone into, I'm just thinking about it now, I believe it's because it's like when everything becomes one, it becomes nothing. Because if there's one, only one thing, then there's no thing. So, it's the same as humanity, is that as we experience ourselves little by little, collectively, as a system, as a living organism, the moment that we fully experience that, we drop through that into a finer knowing, which is that the organism we're part of isn't humanity, but the Earth. Humanity is the most conscious layer of organic existence of the Earth. And so humanity does not exist except as a component of the system of the Earth. And so we're not suffering together as humanity, and humanity isn't some cause that needs to be fought for or wept over. We are consciousness with a shadow, and we are all the way in the shadow now. And the nature of that shadow is that we experience ourselves as alien other beings with an affinity for what we would like to be. And so we create these perfect images, these plastic simulacra, facsimiles of beauty, of celebrity, of success. And that intensifies the dichotomy, the rich and the poor, the healthy and the sick, the ugly and the beautiful, the famous and the anonymous. That bifurcation is in evidence in everything. And on the one hand, it seems that the two opposites are coming close together and blurring into each other, and on the other hand, we can see that the opposite's true, that the tension between the opposites is becoming greater and greater, the distance. The poor can't really get any poorer than poorest of the poor, because you can't go below zero, but the rich just keep getting richer. And, well, not sure where I'm going with this at all, except to the end of this podcast, the end of this series. I guess that's enough. It'll have to be enough. One of these days, I'll just get to be without having to communicate anything, without reaching out or jumping up and down or waving my arms around. So the website should now be up. Well, that was somewhat optimistic. If this podcast goes up tomorrow, which is Sunday, then the website probably won't be up. But it should be up certainly within the next few days, unless there's some sort of snafu. And the website is an exquisite corpse that we shall see if it's resurrectable. It's the 14 pieces of Osiris which have been put together by the goddess, and it testifies to the ending of something, because every ending is a beginning. I don't exactly know what's ending any more than I know what's beginning. I could try to put it into words, but one of the things I've seen recently that's confirmed the need for an ending is that it doesn't really matter how much I put out there, how clearly I express what's happening, it will always be misunderstood. And at the risk of being misunderstood, it's not about the words. It never has been. Those who are attracted, intrigued by my words, and who want to find out more about me because the words have intrigued them, by and large are going to be disappointed and frustrated. It's only those who can actually recognize something within themselves that I am manifesting through these words, a way of being, who can recognize that and who are drawn to that way of being in themselves, but who wish to be in a place or a space where they can nurture that way of being that is so delicate and small within them, in proximity to another who is embodying that way a little more truly, whose feet are a little more grounded in what he knows. I'm not anything more than a partial embodiment of truth who is communicating not even so much what he knows, but the ways in which he's been able to understand his knowing, and as a way to attempt being in what I know and communicating from what I know, at the risk of actually losing my footing in what I know. And this is a big risk. It may be foolish of me. It may indeed have been foolish of me to want to bring a way of being that I'm discovering to others and to use it as a way to make a living. Knowing that it's so delicate and so tenuous this way that the chances of compromising what I know in order to turn a way of being into a way of doing are enormous. But embodying the truth can't be something that's an attachment or an investment anyway. So if I'm okay with coming out of what I know and getting lost again and being compromised and being corrupted, then all of this is part of that. All of this is a way for me to be okay with that. I know I've created a dichotomy. There's people out there who think I'm something because others think I'm something special, different. And the thing is that I am. I am something that others can recognize. But it's a way. It's not a thing. It's just a way. And so that dichotomy is a test for me. It's an opportunity for me to stay in what I know to be true and not succumb to the temptation to use, to define my own honesty and integrity against others, because that's, as soon as I start to do that, then I'm being untrue. And that was what I was trying to get at with the tulpas as well, that what I'm trying to get at, really, anymore. And it's like I want to shed my skin, and I want for my audience to shed its skin, not individually but collectively, so that my audience is, and it's not my audience, how pretentious that sounds, but all of you out there, whoever the hell you are listening to this, there's just a whole spectrum of you. Some of you resonate with what I'm saying at a deep level, and some of you just get something intellectual from it. It's titillating, it's scintillating, it's challenging, it's threatening, whatever. And well, those members of my audience are letting me know the ways in which I'm not being true, because I don't have anything to say to you. This isn't coming from a place of the intellect, and my developed intellect has turned into a liability, finally, because understanding is such a very small part. And although we can bring understanding to what we know, and so communicate some small part of what we know, that in itself is only a way to open the way to that knowing for others. Now I'm babbling. Anyway, so Galactic Blues, Vagabond Blues, Wanderings of a Galactic Mind will continue, at least for a couple more weeks. And then I don't know. The website will contain all information anyone could want to know about Sweater and what it was. Essentially, what it is not any of that. But again, that structure of ideas that the website is founded in a knowing, my own experience of Sweater and of how it's evolved. And so although anyone who comes to Sweater will find something quite different, the information on the website will still provide guidelines as to what to expect, to a degree. But really what Sweater is a morphic field that invites you into a way of being, honesty. And that's about all it is. And I am at the center of that morphic field, and I am there to provide an anchor of knowing, a compass for which you can gauge your own honesty and integrity with my input, interaction. It's a fun space, it's a loving space, it's a tender space, it's a space that you will get triggered. God knows I've found my own forum to be pretty hairy kind of battlefield of late, to the point that I don't even want to show up at my own forum. Sweater then is a space for me to be with kindred spirits in a space of trust, because I'm not interested in sparring or combat or intellectual one-upmanship. Those of you who just want to come by and check out the guru and shoot holes in his system, you won't find me there anymore, because, well, I'm seeing more and more what's of value to me personally, what I value, and that is heart connections. And without honesty and openness and tenderness, there's no possibility of real connection. I don't know why I'm saying all this, just that I guess I know I'm attracting attention from the wrong places as well as the right, and that's the consequences of me showing off rather too much, of letting my old self take the reins a little bit and say, woohoo, look, you can do this, and I can do this, and look, I know accents, I know French, I know dance moves, I know it all, I'm the uber tuba. So, you only know what's enough when you know what's too much. It is intoxicating for me, it is very tempting to want to entertain people and be admired. I'm sure everyone can relate to that. And I guess that's what's ending, if anything. I don't know if it means that I will actually change any of my doings, or just be doing the same doings from a different place in myself. I guess we'll see. But this is essentially an open invitation. Yeah, to aeoluskephas.com. And thank you to everyone for listening and sticking with me through the thick and thin. And a very happy spring to all you chickens. Ain't nothing like a chicken wing. It's a grand adventure, and, well, I guess I have a flair for drama, and I maybe overdo a little bit, but I'd like those who didn't get it to know that my tongue was always quite firmly in my cheek, and I'm surprised, as anyone, by how seriously people took all of this stuff, which isn't to say that it isn't serious, it may well be, but I'm not seriously invested in any of these illusions that I create for a living. Put them out there, they get devoured, they get consumed, and they become part of you. And I suppose I've actually given people quite a few sugar-coated red pills, and there's probably quite a few people who resent me for that. As I say, that's the consequences of me wanting to entertain and reach a wider audience, and I will have to live with those consequences. But I think that all told, it's worked out quite nicely so far. All told. What's next? Is that it? Can I go now? gonna go now.